This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Charlie Murphy, all shows sold out. Tomorrow at Rumors, Charlie Murphy, all shows sold out.
Rick James?
No, not
Charlie Murphy.
Rick
baby.
James on the Chappelle Show, of course, but Charlie Murphy from Chappelle Show fame. And then starting next week at Rumors for 2 weeks, K. Trevor Wilson. You can get tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com or by calling them at 204-488-4520.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's the voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Bruce Lubke. Bruce, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Bruce, are you there?
I am here.
There you go, Bruce. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well ourselves, thank you. Just got to give we got to give you props to begin with. You tweeted at us to ask Chris Dingman about the brawl back in 1993, and he just did a great job telling that story. So we got to give you thanks for that.
Amazing story.
Yeah, I can tell you the other half, because Darren Ritchie, who was on the team that year as well, is now an assistant coach with the Wheat Kings, and he was on the ice right at the end of the game when it all kind of started, and he. It's interesting, it was a 6-on-5. Brandon was down a goal, so they had the extra attacker on. And Darren said, they didn't score. I was dejected. I was heading back to the bench. And the next thing I know, I got Chris Dingman and Colin Kluchek going past me.
Never, not a normal scene in the course of a hockey game.
Back in the 90s. And I have to make a little correction for you guys. And I don't know if Chris mentioned this. It was actually 94, not 93.
Okay.
So it was because it was 20 years ago. We're celebrating the two-decade anniversary.
Oh, there you go. And we're celebrating it by reuniting the Regina Pats and the Brandon Wheat Kings in the playoffs starting tonight in Regina. You know, the Wheat Kings are the number 7 seed. The Pats, obviously, the number 2 seed. Yet the Wheat Kings have had some good success against the Pats this year, going 5-3-0 in their 8 games. To your mind, is this a good matchup for the Wheat Kings, even though they are the underdog?
I think it is. I think probably when you look at it a little bit, it's a tad misleading when you say second versus seventh. The Pats won the East Division, obviously, but the division wasn't probably as a good top to bottom this year as the Central. And had you done the overall standings, the Pats, I believe, would have been tied for fifth place. They were just 8 points better than the Wheat Kings as far as the season standings were concerned. So it's probably not quite the mismatch that second versus seventh place matchup might normally be. From Brandon's standpoint, you mentioned they had success against them, won 5 of 8 regular season meetings. They won the last 2 games in a home-and-home series to finish out the regular season last weekend, including a dramatic overtime in Regina last Friday, which is their only win that they actually had in Regina during the regular season. So that might give Brandon a little bit of extra confidence going into this series. But as they all say, it's a brand-new season when you get into the playoffs. So I don't know how much what happened in the regular season can factor into this playoff series, aside from the fact that these two teams are two teams that tend to be more on the offensive side of things rather than the defensive side of things. And based on the 2 games that I saw last weekend between these two teams, it should be a fast-paced kind of series with a lot of scoring chances for both teams.
And Bruce, you mentioned offensive more than defensive, and you can talk about a defenseman who's offensive, and Ryan Pulock, a draft pick of the New York Islanders, a Grandview, Manitoba native. How has he played this season for Brandon, and has he maybe touched up some parts of his game that he needed to improve on?
I think I think Ryan had a good year. I don't know if it was a great year, but it was a good year. He's obviously more of an offensive defenseman. Mm-hmm. 63 points in 66 games this year. 34 of those points came on the power play, and probably the hardest shot in the Western Hockey League. I know at the Wheat Kings skills day this year was 102 miles an hour or something that, as far as the skills was the shot was concerned. So he's a big offensive weapon, particularly on a Brandon power play that was the second best in the Western Hockey League during the course of the regular season. I think from Ryan Pollock's standpoint, and you can probably say this about almost any player as they come out of junior hockey, defensively, he still's got some work to do in his own zone. And I think part of that is that he's not an overly aggressive or physical defenseman, and it's not because he's a smaller guy or anything. He's fair size. He's about 6'1 and 215 pounds, so it's not that he doesn't have the physical strength to handle it. It's just not been part of his game for the most part, and you know, I would like to see that area of his game improve a little bit, his defensive zone play, particularly underneath the hash marks in the defensive zone. Certainly that's something that the Islanders are going to have to work with him on as he makes his transition to the pro game, and I would assume that'll happen next fall.
Bruce, we got to ask you about Jace Harluck. He's 2014 draft eligible. He's ranked by some people to go in the first round, others to go in the second round. He led the Wheaties in scoring this year, but he's been suspended three times this year, twice against the Regina Pats. Is Harluck a targeted man in the series because of, you know, the previous stuff that's happened against the Pats?
It'll be interesting to see. I think if you're the Regina Pats, you're saying to your players, don't worry about any kind of revenge or whatever on Jace Harluck for what has transpired in the past. It's interesting, the two hits that he got suspended for against the Pats happened about 3 weeks apart in the month of December, one in early December, one in late December. So it has been quite a while ago. He didn't play this past weekend because he was suspended for another hit, but that was in a game against the Edmonton Oil Kings. And I was talking to Jace earlier this week, and the one thing we talked about was whether or not he needed to make any adjustments to his style of play in order to, prevent those kind of hits from happening. And he admitted there's a bit of a fine line where he has to walk now, where he has to be a little bit more cautious on making some hits, especially probably the bigger hits that are open to him. And yet he can't lean too far on that cautious side and take away from his game, which includes being a little bit rambunctious, maybe a little bit of an agitator kind of guy. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. He hasn't played in a couple of weeks. I talked to him earlier this morning, and he's pretty anxious to get going and get these playoffs underway here tonight.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by the voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Bruce Lubke. The Wheat Kings and the Regina Pats open their WHL quarterfinal series tonight in Regina.
Yeah, Bruce, pardon my mispronunciation if I do here. Chandler, is it Stevenson or Stephenson?
Stevenson,
okay. Chandler, 89 points in 69 games. We don't know a lot about him, but obviously he's been a productive offensive player. Is shutting him down a key, and what are his greatest attributes?
Well, I think the Pats do have Chandler Stevenson, but they have 430 goal scorers. Dyson Stevenson. Doesn't sound like he's going to play to start the series. He missed the last two games. Word is he's got a broken hand, and doesn't sound like he's going to play this weekend. He was actually the Pats' leading goal scorer. And then Morgan Klimchuk, Calgary's first-round pick from last year, and Boston Lear, a 20-year-old that they traded for early in the season for Medicine Hat, all with 30 or more goals. But I think Chandler Stevenson is the best offensive weapon they have and the most skilled player of that group, and certainly trying to shut him down or limit what he can do will be one of the keys for the Wheat Kings. Eight shorthanded goals to lead the Western Hockey League, so he's dangerous on the penalty kill as well as far as creating offense. And I've liked Chandler Stevenson as a player throughout his Western League career. His one issue has always been that he's never been able to have a full season where he was completely healthy, and I think that happened for him this year, which is why he was able to take a big step forward. And I think he's become more of a 200-foot player, so he's definitely been a bit better in his own zone, which I think has helped him become a better player offensively. And as you know, spend less time in your own end, more time in the offensive zone, you're probably going to get more offensive chances. I think these are two teams, as I mentioned earlier, two teams that play probably more of an up-tempo offensive style. I don't think goals should be a problem, or at least scoring chances will be an issue in this series. I think probably when it comes down to it, whoever can play better or the best in their own zone and perhaps win the special teams battle are likely the team that could come out on top in this series.
Bruce, when you look at the goaltending situation for the Brandon Wheat Kings this season, it was split primarily between Jordan Paperny and Curtis Honey. Paperny got 15 more starts than Honey did. Sort of a two-part question for you. One, who is going to get the start and goal for the Wheat Kings tonight? And then secondly, neither goalie has any playoff experience in the WHL. How much of a concern is that for the Wheat Kings entering this this playoff series?
Well, it's going to be Jordan Paperny, the rookie, to start tonight here in game number one. I don't think that's a big surprise during the course of the second half of the season. He kind of took over the number one job with Brandon. And to be honest, I never asked the question. I assume that, you know, when the Wheat Kings were battling for a playoff spot and needed wins in the final week of the regular season, Jordan Paperny started the last three games of the regular season and won them all. So I just naturally assume he's going to be the guy that will be in net tonight for the Brandon Wheat Kings. As far as the playoff experience, I mean, when you look at Brandon's team as a whole, of their 24-player roster, they have a grand total of 67 Western Hockey League playoff games, and 45 of those come from three players, Ryan Pollock, Eric Roy, and Vince Mayer, all fourth-year guys that had played in two previous Western League playoffs. So personally, I think the playoff experience factor is a little bit overhyped or overblown. If you look at Jordan Paperny personally, for him, he was the playoff MVP in the Alberta Midget Hockey League last season when he was playing with the Southside Athletic Club. He went all the way to the league final. They were runners-up in that league final, but he still won the playoff MVP award. And he played nearly 1,000 minutes in the AMHL playoffs last year. And I know it's a different league and probably different crowds and different pressure, but certainly that gave him a lot of playoff experience and a lot of pressure-packed minutes. There was a couple of games, one in particular, where they had a quintuple overtime victory, a 1-0 game in their semifinal series, and he stopped 62 shots for the shutout in that contest. And, I mean, if you're in a 1-0 quintuple overtime game, that's pressure-packed no matter what level you're at. And I was talking to Jordan earlier in the week about that. He really feels that that has helped him prep a little bit for the Western League playoffs, and he does understand it'll be a different stage and a bigger, you know, higher caliber and all those kind of things. But he really feels comfortable. And to me, he's a guy that doesn't seem like he gets, you know, overly emotional, or and things don't seem to bother him that much, whether it's giving up a goal here or there or what the case might be. So I think he's going to be fine. But it's interesting because the guy that will be at the other end of the ice, Dawson McCauley for the Regina Pats, also no WHL playoff experience, but he was the playoff co-MVP in the Saskatchewan Junior League last year, and he helped lead Yorkton to the league title. So you have two guys with playoff experience last year at different levels, different leagues, but certainly first time in the Western Hockey League. It'll be an interesting matchup with those two guys in net.
Bruce, you know this better than anybody. The Wheaties have gone through a bunch of different coaches over the last several years. How much of a stabilizing force has it been for the Wheat Kings to have Kelly McCrimmon back behind the bench after a few years of coaching upheaval?
I think it's been pretty important. You know, there are not a lot of players on this team that played under Coach Kelly McCrimmon the last time he was behind the bench back in 2010. 2011, but I think just the way he goes about things as a coach, it's allowed a lot of more, a lot more structure to what the team does, and that I think is both on and off the ice. And I think what Kelly does well as a coach, to me at least, is that he understands you know, players' strengths and weaknesses and tries to put them in the best position possible to have success. So that means, you know, to me, if you're a guy that is more of an energy player that, you know, doesn't necessarily have the offensive skill, what he's going to put you in a third-line role where you can use that strength of being an energy player and maybe a physical player as an asset to not only help yourself have success, but help the team have success. And I think that's what he's really, really good at doing. And I really believe it's been a big difference from Brandon's standpoint in their success this year. I also think it's with what the success and the, I guess, the restocking and rebuilding that they've done this year, I think it's allowed a little less pressure this year and maybe created a little bit more fun around the team as far as what they've had for success.
Bruce, we'll let you go on this last question. Earlier this week, the Wheat Kings, it was announced the Wheat Kings are going to pick first overall in the WHL Bantam Draft after Saskatoon won the draft lottery, but the Wheat Kings owned that pick thanks to a trade back in 2012. With the first overall pick in the upcoming draft and last year's fourth and sixth overall draft picks, are the Wheat Kings about to embark on another period of sustained success towards the top of Canadian junior hockey?
I believe they are. I just add in there, when you look at this year's team, so we were just talking about Jordan Paperny. Well, he's in his first year as a 17-year-old. Jace Howerlick, second year, but a 17-year-old. John Quinville has had a really good year his second year, but he's a 17-year-old as well. On some of the guys, Tim McGauley's in his second year as an 18-year-old player this year, one of the top scorers on the team. Ryan Pilon, who they got from Lethbridge in an early season trade, a lot of people thought he might be a top 10 pick in the 2015 NHL draft as a 17-year-old and a second-year guy. So when you start thinking about the Wheat Kings a couple years down the road, all those players that I just mentioned are all going to be either 19 or 20-year-olds in the Western Hockey League, and that's going to be the core of your team. Well, then you add in the mix of, you mentioned the four and six picks. Nolan Patrick from Winnipeg is the number four pick, and he's with the Wheat Kings right now, gaining some experience in the Western Hockey League. Cale Clegg was the defenseman that they took sixth overall, and he's going to be, I think, a really elite offensive defenseman in the WHL. They'll be 17-year-olds 2 years down the road, and this number one pick that they'll have this year will be a 16-year-old just getting into the league. But we've seen a lot of those first-year 16-year-olds that are high picks have a lot of early success. Braden Point and Moose Jaw last year, Matthew Barzell and Seattle this year. So 2 years down the road, I think this is going to be a pretty stacked Brandon Wheat Kings team as far as their talent level is concerned. The key for them will be to make sure that they harness that talent correctly. And the other question will be, can they maybe move the timetable up a little bit? Will it be as early as next season that this team is sitting nearer at the top of the conference standings once again?
First and foremost, it's the playoffs in the WHL. They get underway tonight in Regina, the Brandon Wheat Kings against the Regina Pats. The voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings is Bruce Lubke. Bruce, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Bruce. Enjoy the playoffs. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to the voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Bruce Lubke, for joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show to talk about that playoff series. Of course, tonight at the MTS Center here in Winnipeg, it's the Jets and the Carolina Hurricanes. Little rumblings going around the Carolina Hurricanes that they might be in the market to maybe make some bigger moves, maybe blow up the team a little bit. Here is Darren Dreger talking about that in insider trading earlier this week.
Let's start with Carolina, Darren. On the verge of missing the playoffs for a fifth straight year, rumblings about Kirk Muller's job as head coach, but could that be the tip of the iceberg?
It could be. Let's start with the trade expectations in Carolina, and there are some big names in play here leading up to the trade deadline. We speculated on the future of Cam Ward. It's highly likely Cam Ward will be traded in the summer, even though he has the no-trade clause, and the names just seem to get bigger from there. We're talking about Jeff Skinner. We're talking about the possibility of even Eric Staal, the captain of the Carolina Hurricanes, potentially being in play now, primarily for financial reasons, but obviously this is a significant shakeup in the works as well. Now, Jim Rutherford's future in Carolina also somewhat in question as he continues to contemplate whether or not he wants to move upstairs or perhaps out of the mix entirely.
Interesting talk there from Darren Dreger regarding the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, obviously a bit of a disappointing year for them, but then again, they are trotting out, as we talked about with John Forslund, you know, about 90 minutes ago, they are trotting out a very young lineup, a very young defense there. Would it be too rash in your mind to start making big trades and looking to deal away the captain, Eric Staal, and, you know, make really shake up the core of this team?
I don't know, Richie, about trading Eric Staal and Jordan Staal, who are both under contract, but I don't think it's ridiculous to start talking about a shakeup. I mean, this team right now, as it's currently constructed, isn't going to be a playoff team next year. And I think it's a few years away from, at least a few years away, Richie, from being a team that can make the playoffs and do some damage. I mean, you're looking at a team that needs to get bigger and more talented up the middle, and they've got to get some more NHL-ready defensemen on the blue line. obviously defensemen are on the blue line. So you look at this team, and Anton Khudobin, do you go with him? And Justin Peters did a nice job. Do you move a guy who's making a lot of money and try to address other areas? I don't know about moving Eric Staal, but I think other players, Ward and Skinner, are definitely in play. And when you talk about the coach, I like Kirk Muller, and John Forslund seems to think his job's not in jeopardy. But absolutely, I wouldn't be surprised if in the offseason the Hurricanes make some big moves.
Well, I mean, the question is, though, and Darren Dreger alluded to it there, who's making those moves? Is it Jim Rutherford or is it somebody else? Jim Rutherford's had some good success with this team over the course of his tenure. I mean, he's been there for a long time. But he's also had a lot of off years. And you wonder if he's the right guy to take them forward in the sense that, you know, he built the team to the point that it is right now and it's struggled for some time. And he's gone through a fair amount of coaches. You know, now, of course, being the general manager of a team for that long, you're going to go through coaches, but Laviolette, Maurice twice, you have Kirk Muller here now. The team is flawed, and one, the biggest problem, and Jim Rutherford's won a cup, and he's been to a final, so you certainly have to give him more than due credit for that. But the problem he's had throughout his tenure in Carolina since they moved there is that he hasn't been able to find a number one National Hockey League defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time to go. I mean, I know they don't grow on trees, but that's a long time to go without ever supplying your coach with a top-line defenseman. Now, you still won, notwithstanding that lack of player. But at the end of the day, it's difficult to win, and I think that's one of the reasons why they haven't been able to sustain success year in, year out, because they don't have the defensive base. And they had goaltending issues before. I mean, Arthur Zerbe caught lightning in a bottle, and then Cam Ward, up till his injuries issues of the past 2 years, solidified them between the pipes. But that is the big thing, is getting a defenseman, if not two or three even. And how do you do that? Well, you know, it's that old robbing Peter to pay Paul. You're going to take your centers. You're going to trade a big center. Like, a guy like Eric Staal can get you two defensemen probably and something else. So maybe that's the way you do it. But the question for me is whether Rutherford's the one making these moves, and if that's the case, then I do think they will make moves, and I think it ought to be time that they make some moves.
So Paul is Paul Holmgren. Who's Peter?
Carmanos.
Oh, so you're
right. Nice.
Okay.
Well done. You could have gone with Laviolette there. That would have been probably most people what they would have said, but you go with the owner of the team and Carmanos. That's not bad. I'll give you full props for that. We'll obviously see more about the Carolina Hurricanes tonight. We'll see them in person for the first and only time this season at MTS Center. The game gets underway at 6 p.m. You can hear it live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Chris Peters from UnitedStatesOfHockey.com to talk about some of the college free agents being signed throughout the NHL.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or visit them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from UnitedStatesOfHockey.com, Chris Peters. Chris, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good afternoon to you. Good to be with you.
Chris, obviously we brought you on to talk about the number of the college free agents that are being signed by NHL teams as their college careers and college seasons come to an end. We've seen a number already this week. Expect a few more later on this weekend, and as teams eventually drop out of the Frozen Four competition in NCAA hockey. Earlier this week, the Phoenix Coyotes signed highly touted college free agent Greg Carey out of St. Lawrence University. To your mind, what are his greatest attributes as a player, and do you think he can make an immediate impact in the NHL next year for the Coyotes?
Well, I think he could. It kind of depends on what their depth ends up looking like. Greg Carey had a tremendous college career. He was there at St. Lawrence all 4 years. Had an opportunity to leave for pro contracts last season, decided to stay, ended up being the second leading scorer in the nation. You know, in terms of his assets, certainly, you know, quick release on the shot, great vision, just he's an older guy, so he's, you know, been through junior and college, and so he's kind of ready. He's been through the whole route. And when you can get a guy, that's what makes college free agents so attractive, is that they've come along a little more slowly than some of the elite prospects that you see. Some of these guys are late bloomers. Some just played in leagues where they weren't discovered. And then they have this opportunity to kind of just grow their game at no cost to any team, you know, whether it's a draft pick or financially. So I think that's the huge value there. And obviously they're on the ELC deal as well. So to have that entry-level deal is a nice value. But, you know, I think his skill set certainly makes him a candidate to be in the NHL next year. You know, the last guy that Phoenix signed out of college was a Hobie Baker winner, Andy Mealy. He still really hasn't cracked into the lineup. I think, you know, in terms of projecting, Carey probably a little bit, you know, more ready for the role than Mealy was at the time that he came out after winning the Hobie Baker.
And Christian Follin out of UMass Lowell is considered by many to be the top college remaining free agent on the market. What do you think? What do you think he's going to be as a player? Because some of these players are just so hard to project based on, as you mentioned, they've developed a little bit more than some of the players they're playing against, and then they're jumping to top competition in the National Hockey League or the AHL.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Follin's one of those guys that he's a Swedish kid, but he played in the North American Hockey League, which is Tier 2 junior hockey in the U.S. And so he was kind of one of those very late bloomers. He's come on now. He's an excellent skater, physical, big. You know, he's 6'3", about 210, I think, at this point. So he shot a puck through the net last week in the Hockey East tournament. So, you know, he can really hammer it as well. I think that it's tough to say where he'd slot into a lineup. I think, you know, he's still a bit of a project. There are things that he's going to need to do at the next level. Probably in the American League to start. You know, it's not going to be like a Danny DeKeyser situation. I think he's got all the physical tools. It's just going to be a matter of adjusting to the pro game. I'm sure whatever team ends up signing him is going to, you know, depending on how far UMass Lowell goes in the tournament, they're playing for the Hockey East Championship later today. I'm sure most teams would offer him immediate playing time to see if he could burn that year off that contract to sweeten the pot a little bit. I think he definitely could step into an NHL lineup next season. Probably in a diminished role, but eventually maybe could be a top four kind of guy. I mean, he's really just continued his development is just on a very steep arc over the last couple of years, which is a good thing to see. And so as long as he continues on that, he should be able to be a pretty solid prospect going forward. So definitely the top guy that the majority of teams will be looking at this year.
Chris, Drew asked you about Greg Carey out of St. Lawrence University, signed with the Phoenix Coyotes. His brother, Matt Carey, signed with the Chicago Blackhawks. We heard that they might be a package deal. Were you surprised that Matt Carey didn't also sign with Phoenix? And how does his game differ from his brother's? Also, I guess we heard that there's a chance he might play for Chicago this year due to some of the injuries.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that, you know, it sounded like Minnesota was the team that was, you know, favored to get them both. They had the spots for them both. They were interested in both. I'm sure that most teams that were going at them were interested in both brothers. The issue with Matt Carey is he's only played 1 year of college hockey. He had to sit out last season. He was academically ineligible, was too old for junior. So that's a year off of hockey and a crucial development year for him. Not as highly touted as Greg in terms of skills. Same kind of very quick release. He's kind of a natural goal scorer. Had 18 goals this year, which was as many as Greg had. He's an older guy too. I think he's 21, 22 at this point. You have to kind of wonder how much is he going to develop into that. I think that, we always think that brothers will stay together, but they have to go where the best opportunity is. Chicago did offer, it sounded like they offered immediate playing time and an opportunity to burn that year off of the contract as well for Matt. And so, but I think that he's probably going to end up in the AHL for a little while just because of the fact that he had that year off and he's not quite at the level that Greg is at. And Greg is a little older as well, so that's kind of to be expected.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Chris Peters from the United States of Hockey.com. Chris, obviously Winnipeg Jets fans here have been paying a little more attention to UMass Lowell than they might normally be, and that's because of Winnipeg Jets draft pick Connor Hellebuck, the goaltender for UMass Lowell. He got a shutout last night as they advanced to the Hockey East Final. He's been absolutely terrific for UMass Lowell all season long. How has he evolved as a goaltender this year, and how far is he away from making an impact at the pro level in your mind?
Yeah, well, I honestly think he's one of the best goalie prospects out there. I mean, period. You look at guys like, I'm more familiar with the American guys, with John Gibson. He's stepped up. He's probably one of the best goalies not in the NHL. Connor Hellebuck is a guy that nobody really talks about as being this elite prospect. And I think he has become that over his time. He's just, the thing that makes him so successful is just that calm and steady presence in the net. He is just very technically sound. He's gotten stronger. I remember talking right before that draft, I talked to Mike Ayers, who was now with Boston College, but was at that time the goalie coach at USA Hockey. And he said, this kid is going to be a dominant goalie in college hockey, and with potential, a very bright future. He didn't have a lot of the goalie coaching in his younger years, so now he's getting that at UMass Lowell, and he's getting just more technically sound, and he's getting stronger. So, I definitely see him as a guy that is going to come in and be a potential goalie of the future for Winnipeg. I think that you look at a guy like that drafted out of the North American League, kind of lightly scouted these days, but certainly what he's done at UMass Lowell and going into next year, I think he's going to have the net to himself next year at Lowell with Doug Carr graduating, who he kind of shared some time with over the last couple of years. So once it's his net, he's going to get a lot of reps, and that's going to be huge for him for his pro future.
Chris, we talked to Chris Dingman of Tampa Bay Lightning television broadcast earlier in the show, and we were talking about all the the prospects they've unearthed. Not through the draft necessarily, through free agency and guys who weren't drafted out of the CHL and in different leagues. Cody Kunik's a guy the Lightning just signed. He's 23 years old. He's out of Alaska. Signed him to a one-year deal and immediately sent him to Tampa. What can you tell us about his game?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see Alaska very much. They're not on TV, and I'm not getting out to Alaska very often, unfortunately. But he is, he's a skilled guy. You talk to some people about him. He's got skills. Just a strong player, very strong on the puck. Seemed to have a fair amount of interest in the market after their season was done. And was the WCHA Player of the Year. It's a little different now. The college hockey went through realignment last year. WCHA used to be the best conference in the country. Now it's kind of like a mid-major conference. But he was the best player. Having 40 points in a college hockey season in any year in school, that's a pretty darn good season. Mm-hmm. So that's what he had, and it doesn't matter the competition. He certainly brought it, and I think the skill level is good. And then, once you see that the Lightning signed somebody with the success that they've had with undrafted guys, you gotta kind of give them even a little bit of bonus points for that, because obviously they see something in him where he could potentially be in the Lightning roster soon.
Chris, yesterday you tweeted out that now that Western Michigan's season is done, you expect 22-year-old sophomore defenseman Kenny Morrison to attract a lot of interest from NHL teams. What can you tell us about his game, and where might he end up as far as the NHL goes?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure entirely if he's going to come out. He is a sophomore, but I think the interest level is there. I've talked to a few people about him. I'm not sure, where he would end up, but he's a big kid. He's got some mobility. He definitely moves the puck very well. I think his offense is growing. You look at the guys that have come out of Western Michigan lately, particularly on defense, and Danny DeKeyser is obviously last year was the top college free agent that everybody wanted. Playing for Andy Murray, former NHL coach, a guy that really understands the game, understands defense. They have just been churning out defensemen like crazy. So I think that increases the attraction to him. Now, DeKeyser had the same, he hit more interest as a sophomore, decided to go back for his junior season so that he could get another year of development under his belt, and obviously that paid off because he was able to hop right into the NHL and be a contributor immediately. I think, if I were Kenny Morrison, it would depend on the amount of interest, but I would consider staying for one more year of development, maybe be one of those top guys next year where you have many teams battling over for you and you can find the right situation.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris Peters from UnitedStatesOfHockey.com joins us, talking a little NCAA hockey on the program. Chris, after last night's flurry of college games, the NCAA conference championships have been championship games have been set, leading up, of course, to the Frozen Four tournament, which takes place in about a couple weeks' time in April in Philadelphia. To your mind, who do you like to emerge out of the four conferences that'll get to play for the national title in Philadelphia?
It's kind of funny. The top two teams in the country didn't make their conference final game, Boston College and Minnesota. So those are two teams that I think now they get a little bit extra rest heading into the national tournament. I think both are probably among the favorites to be competing for the national title. You can't count out UMass Lowell. Connor Hellebuck is the X factor for them. He's one of the best goaltenders in the country. If not the best, had the best save percentage so far this season. And coming off of a shutout against a pretty good Notre Dame team yesterday, that's a team that's just looking stronger and stronger as things go on. Also have to watch out for Wisconsin, same kind of situation. They have a really great goaltender. They're going to play for the Big Ten Championship tonight against Ohio State. Those are the teams that I'm watching most closely for this, but you never can tell. The great thing about the NCAA tournament, it's great and bad. It's a one and done. So, if you have a bad night, that means that maybe some of these mid-major schools can break through and pull off a few upsets and go on a little bit of a run. But it makes for some really exciting hockey. I've seen no shortage of excitement in that tournament. I'm really looking forward to seeing that get going next week.
Final question, Chris. Hobie Baker, is it going to be Johnny Gaudreau of BC, or are there other guys who may have a chance to get that award?
If it's not unanimous for Johnny Gaudreau, it's a crime. He is by far the best player in the country. His point total speaks for itself. His skill level speaks for itself. He is one of the best players on one of the best teams in the country. It's just, he was a finalist as a sophomore. He definitely deserves to be the winner this year. And all due respect, I think the other two guys that could join him, probably Greg Carey will be one of them. Not sure. I'm guessing it could be one of the goaltenders, possibly Adam Wilcox from Minnesota. Could be in that mix as well. So it'll be interesting to see who the three Hobie hat trick guys are, but it's going to be Gaudreau. I just can't see anybody else coming away with it.
You can find his work at UnitedStatesOfHockey.com. Chris Peters, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 online, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Minutes past 2 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall, the official deli of Illegal Curve. They've been in business for nearly 30 years, and they're open all the time for your food needs. Ezzy is a regular there, so if you ever can't find Ezzy, a good place to check out would be Bernstein's Deli. You can check them out online, bernsteinsdeli.com. Richie wants to spend some of the next 25 or so minutes talking about the Winnipeg Jets goaltending situation. There's been a lot of talk recently about Andre Pavlik, especially since he's been injured now. Mm-hmm. Over the last number of games, he's been injured. Al Montoya has stepped into the Jets lineup, and there's been a lot of talk about, should Al Montoya be the number one goaltender for this Winnipeg Jets team? Should the Jets, potentially look at using a compliance buyout on Andre Pavlik? How do the Jets improve their goaltending situation? So we wanted to talk about those topics going forward here on the program this Saturday afternoon. Obviously Andre Pavlik has not been what the Jets had hoped he was going to be. Whether that's a factor, a function of him not playing very well, or him having shoddy defense in front of him, or a combination of the two, That's for people to evaluate and decide on their own. But to me, I don't think that the, you know, I don't know that Andre Pavlik's the answer, but I also don't think that Al Montoya is necessarily the long-term answer for this Winnipeg Jets team going forward in their attempts to improve the goaltending position.
I guess my question is, if you think Al Montoya is now the guy to take this team forward, and first off, I should qualify by saying that I think Al Montoya is a very good backup. I think his attitude, he's a positive guy, he's very good with the media. I think that's a good backup goalie attitude, and I think, I personally think that Montoya is best suited to be a backup for an established first stringer. So, like, you know, you go into a city like New York, for example, and Henrik Lundqvist is there, just picking it to a goalie.
He was drafted by them. Yeah.
Right, but the idea is like that he would play behind an established 60 to 65 gamer. He'd play his time, he'd give you a solid effort, he'd be good in the room, and if you needed to call on him in an injury situation, you could do that. But my question for people calling for Montoya to start for the Jets is, did you think he was a starter before this year? Because if you didn't, I don't think you want to go off of 25 games and intermittent action to determine that he's the guy to take this team forward. You know, take this team forward. I just don't think that's the case. I think that, and you know, Pavlik hasn't performed up to maybe what his standards and maybe the team's standards, frankly. But I mean, how much more time are you going to give him to do that? So if they're not now compliance buyouts quickly, so people understand that the part of the last CBA you're allowed to buy out players. Two players on your roster, whether it's two in the same year, one in last season, one this year. You're allowed to buy out two players. You have to pay their buyout to the player, but you don't have to count it against the salary cap. So
hang on, let me explain that one more time. It's you can buy out that player. You don't have to. It doesn't cost you anything on the salary cap, but you have to pay him three quarters of his salary.
Yeah, it's two thirds, I think. Pavlik's 26 now. I have to check into that. I think it's two thirds over the double the year term of the contract. So it'd be two-thirds of his contract over the course of 6 years as opposed to 3 years. That's money in his pocket, but that's not something that's caught against the cap of the Winnipeg Jets. Now, they have the option of doing that. He qualifies. Any contract signed since the lockout or not do not qualify for that. Pavlik signed before the lockout, therefore he is able to be bought out without a cap ramification. Now, having said all of that, are the Winnipeg Jets going to spend that much money on Andre, you know, pay $6 to $7 million for Andre Pavlik to not be here? Without a suitable backup, without a suitable netminder to replace him, because Montoya is also not under contract. I don't think that's something that they're going to entertain. First off, I don't see this ownership group or this general manager buying out a player to see him not play, just saying, paying him money to go away. I just don't see that happening. So I think Pavlik's here next year. So I think then you determine who plays goalie alongside Pavlik on an ongoing basis. And I don't think Al Montoya is the guy. Not that I don't think Al Montoya is a solid netminder, but because I don't think Al Montoya is going to be the guy who challenges and takes away the job from Pavlik. I think Pavlik needs to be challenged with another 1B guy who, and then you let them duke it out 40 games each, and you see who's better, and you ride the hot one when you can. That's what I personally think will happen here.
Right, Richie. And because Andre Pavlik was given that big contract a few years back, I think at this point in the season, and now Al Montoya is the starting goaltender. We should mention that tonight will be his fourth straight start because Andre Pavlik is out,
sure,
and Michael Hutchinson is coming in and they're going to go with him. But I think because they gave Andre Pavlik the contract that they gave him, now is not the time that you buy him out. I think maybe with 1 year left on his contract, if he still is not performing.
But now's the time you buy him out without the cap hit, though, as.
You have to do it this offseason. This is your last chance to buy him out.
So
this
maybe, okay, then it would be trading him after next year.
Fair enough.
So I think that the question with the goaltending is, again, do you want to play Montoya the same amount of games as he's played the last couple of years, or do you want to bring someone in to challenge Pavlik?
Right.
And I think at this point, let's be honest, Al Montoya has played better than Pavlik. We've talked about this many times on this show, and we've heard many different shows, Hustler and Lawless, The Roundtable, The Big Show, talk about the goaltending situation. You can look at the numbers. Al Montoya's numbers are much better than Andre Pavlik's numbers, save percentage and goals against average. So not putting the numbers aside, when you start looking forward to this team, and this team is growing, and it's young, and it's going to hopefully get into the playoffs in the upcoming years and challenge to win a playoff series, you have to say, is Andre Pavlik the goaltender that we want to have with this core group and this young group for the next 5 years? And he hasn't really proven that he is the legitimate number one goaltender of this team. I mean, Al Montoya, yes. I don't think anybody's going to argue that Al Montoya is not a number one goaltender. He is the backup goaltender, and he's done an excellent job. Yeah. If I had to give a grade to Al Montoya this year, I'd give him an A. His numbers are great. He's done a great job. Got another big win against the Colorado Avalanche. Didn't have his best. Didn't have his best game.
Played pretty poorly in that game.
But he got the win. Well, he played poorly, but he's having a great year.
I know. I think there is a bit of a double standard in that, you know, when the, you know, Al Montoya gets the win when he plays poorly, Andre Pavlik gets the win when he plays poorly, everybody's ragging on Pavlik, and Montoya, for whatever reason, I think gets a pass.
I'm not. My point was that Al Montoya has done a great job. Now, if you want to bring back a guy that's going to be your backup, maybe you bring him back. But as Richie said, you're most likely going to try to bring a guy back. Bring a guy in that's going to challenge Andre Pavlik. So you can't take anything away from Al Montoya. It's a situation where really you have a guy backupping a goaltender who's not really a number one goaltender. Andre Pavlik now is in his fifth year with this franchise as the legitimate number one goaltender, and he hasn't taken the bull by the horns. I mean, I'm an Andre Pavlik fan, but he's been very inconsistent this year to the point where sometimes Al Montoya is a better option in net for this team, and that's why he's gotten more starts than he did last year. Last year, I mean, Al Montoya, I think, only played 10 games. So don't get me wrong, it was a lockout shortened year. But there's an issue that needs to be addressed here, because if you are going to keep going with a number one goaltender, but really he's not someone who you think is going to be the number one goaltender for the next 5 years, you have to maybe bring someone else in.
I think it's going to be a two-headed monster next year.
I want to talk about the options, about who you think that two-headed monster is going to comprise after the break. But before we do that, quick question for you guys. Why the reticence? If Al Montoya has played better than Pavlik this year, and I would say he probably has.
Pavlik's been a lot better since Maurice was hired, though.
Yes, he has. Why the reticence?
There's no coincidence there.
Well, of course, because the team has played more responsibly defensively. But if the goal is to win, and the goal is to make the playoffs and everything else, why the reticence to give Al Montoya more chances than the 24 games he's had so far this season?
Well, one thing I have to say about that, I mean, that's a fair question, Drew. There are times that I would have started Montoya over Pavlik, so I will say that. But I think also when you look at the coaching staffs, and I mean, there's sure conspiracy theorists who think other people are making the calls, but if you look at the coaching staff, they see the backup goalie on a day-in, day-out basis. Claude Noel pretty sure wanted to keep his job, and Paul Maurice pretty sure wants to get a job next year. If either of those guys, trusting that they have the power, the autonomy in terms of the player selection, don't you think that they would put the goalie in that they think gave them the best chance to win?
That's my point. Yeah,
and that's it's my point too.
Right, so we're agreeing here.
Yeah, and you know, like, that's the thing. It's like the backup quarterback in hockey. We've talked about that in football, and we've talked about that as well. You know, the coach sees him on a day in, day out basis. He sees what throws he can make and what throws he cannot make. And it's similar here. You know, a backup goalie, if he was that good in practice, guys, the coach wants to win and make money and succeed in his career and in general. Does he not want to put in the best player to give himself that opportunity? So I think that's a little bit overblown in terms of, you know, why Pavlik is playing more than Montoya. I don't think salary is strictly dictating. A lot of coaches will tell you that salary somewhat dictates it, but a lot of coaches will tell you it has nothing to do with it at all.
If the Winnipeg Jets were able to make a long playoff run, and Al Montoya was their starting goalie, and the team was able to bank the revenue that they were able to bank off each and every playoff game,
right,
they would gladly have Andre Pavlik and his salary on as a backup if it meant a long playoff run with Al Montoya.
And you guys, quickly, you guys know, like, the Montoya thing they kind of fell back into, right?
I mean, sure.
He wasn't a guy that was necessarily the top of their list. They tried to acquire Jonas Gustafsson, who didn't want to
Well, they did, but they didn't sign
him. Tried to sign him, you're right. They actually acquired his rights before free agency. They didn't sign him because he wouldn't sign here as far as we knew.
It's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, so it's one of those situations where it's not like he's been somebody they've looked at all the time.
I think they wanted Chris Mason back as well before they had to fall into Montoya.
And I thought they luckily fell into Montoya over Chris Mason, with due respect to Chris Mason, who's at the tail end of his career. But yeah, you know, so I don't think this is something that they have had visions that Montoya was going to take them to the promised land for years. I think they kind of lucked into him, and then last year he had some moments, but he wasn't great. Now he's played 24 really strong games this year. Suddenly he's going to be the guy that takes you the next. I don't think that's what happens.
Something to keep an eye on. It's definitely something that's going to be interesting to see if Chevy brings someone else in here.
Well, let's head to break, and on the other side of the break, we'll talk about those options as who could be coming in here to battle with Andre Pavlik for the number one goaltending job. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Following us are good friends Gary Lawless and Andrew Hustler Patterson. We'll be live at Boston Pizza City Place where we are. Then it's Rick Ralph. And then, of course, the three-headed monster, Shane Knighty, Brian Munns, Dennis Bayak with the call. Carolina Hurricanes in town for the Jets and the Canes. 6 p.m. puck drop at MTS Center. Game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Mr. Pollock, we were talking about this before the break, that you thought that the Jets are going to bring in a second player.
Yeah.
And going to, say, battle it out for the top playoffs, the top goalie job next year. Obviously, the name that comes to mind for most Jets fans is James Reimer, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Obviously, his ties to Manitoba, the controversy earlier this week that really seems that the relationship between the Leafs and Reimer is officially poisoned and he'll be moving on somewhere in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Is James Reimer that guy that should come in and battle with Andrei Pavlik?
Well, I think it makes sense for a few reasons, Drew. I mean, I watched James Reimer. First of all, he's good in the room. I know he's gone all through a lot of drama in Toronto, but he's a hard worker. He's willing to learn. People who work with him say great things about him. And if you want to go, so that's one factor. You want to go based on statistics, well, he's had a better career statistically than, say, Andrei Pavlik, and you take into account the fact that he's played behind a porous Toronto defense really since he came into the National Hockey League in the year 2010, and there are some comparables. And then you look at his age, and I think you see Pavlik is 26 years old, and you see Reimer is 26 years old as well. Now, Pavlik was born in 87 and Reimer in 88, but the point is those guys are kind of at that point in a goaltender's career. Are they 26, 27, 28? What are they going to be? And if you want, you know, what I think would make sense is you want to put two of those guys in a position where, hey, what am I? Pavlik will only have 2 years on his deal after next season. Like, you know, when he gets into next season, Pavlik will have 2 years left on his deal. So, you know, he's starting to think about the next contract. And when you look at Reimer, you're looking at a guy who is going to be saying, okay, what am I in the National Hockey League? So there's an incentive to pit the two guys against each other in a healthy competition and see who can take the reins. And I think healthy competition is what Andrei Pavlik needs most. He hasn't been challenged since he's been with the Jets. And Reimer is an RFA, being a restricted free agent, meaning that if he's traded for, the Jets could sign him to a contract, for example, for the similar 3 years, and maybe around what you're paying Pavlik. And then you say, okay, boys, here you go. We're going to go with these two guys. They're going to cost us $6 million, and we're going to say who can be the best guy. Now, the risk there is that neither of them can be the best guy, and you're stuck with two fairly significant NHL contracts. The positive side could be one of them comes through, takes the next step, and you got a starting goaltender for a reasonable sum. So there's a lot of factors at play here. But I think that's what the Jets are going to do based upon how they've dealt with Pavlik to date.
Yep.
The fact that they haven't pushed him, but yet they still, I think, like him, and they have him under contract for another few years.
Well, Richie, you mentioned that James Reimer makes so much sense, and it really does. He's from Manitoba. He's at that stage of his career where he's really peaking, and, you know, you look at his numbers and his goals against is 3.3 for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's been the backup all year, but the team has had a group of defensemen that just hasn't worked and has quite frankly struggled for many parts of the year. Drew, you look at the other unrestricted free agents, and there's some big names out there. I think it makes a lot of sense, Richie, and I think you'd agree with this, because you look at some of the other goaltenders, Jonas Hiller, you look at Yaroslav Halak, guys that are older than Reimer, they're going to ask for a lot of money. You look at Tim Thomas, he hasn't played very well since being traded to the Dallas Stars. So James Reimer, at the age, and you could probably acquire him and sign him to an honest sum of money. You're not going to have to pay him $5 or $6 million a year.
Well, that's just it. The only other guy really on the UFA market that you think would be kind of a similar situation would be Yaroslav Halak, as you mentioned. As you know, he's just under 30, he's 28 years old. And he's a guy who has had, you know, platooned with Carey Price, platooned somewhat with Brian Elliott as well. So he's familiar with the platoon situation. I think he makes sense in that predicament as well. The issue is, will a guy as a UFA, which Yaroslav Halak is going to be able to choose where he wants to play, will he only have the option of playing in a platoon situation, or
will there be options out there which provide him with the opportunity to be the number one netminder, an undisputed number one netminder?
Right.
So if that's the case, I don't see him coming here. But he certainly would be somebody where you make a call on. Is he a dominant goaltender, though? No. I think you've seen more from Halak than you have from Reimer in terms of potential, but they're not too far off. I think Halak you've seen so much of because of the Habs, that you think he's been around a lot longer. But I think with Halak, you know you're going to get that solid performance. I think with Reimer, he's sometimes off and on, but you see glimpses of brilliance.
Yeah. Where are the glimpses? Drew and I, our eyes just
You see glimpses of brilliance.
Segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, so right, glimpses
and
are good here.
And that leaves you the potential. When you look at James Reimer's career, guys, he's played in only 134 games, but he's been in the league since 2010.
Yep.
Let me ask you this, though. Getting in a guy like Reimer, is that enough for the Jets to hope that improves their goaltending situation? Because, I mean, we're saying that, you know, we think that if they bring in a guy and they have a competition, that's going to result in better goaltending.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that increased competition is going to mean better performance.
But what's the other alternative then? I'm talking about I think the Jets are going to do.
Well, the other alternative, Richie, is really because of the way he's played in the AHL, is you go with Michael Hutchinson instead of Montoya.
No, that's what I'm saying,
the other option.
Well, no,
I'm not saying
that's not an option.
It's not an option it's not an option right now, as you Hutchinson has been a nice surprise for the team. Not to take anything away from him, but if this team wants to take the next step into the playoffs, they need to add a defenseman and another goaltender.
Well, we're going to be facing the Jets and the Carolina Hurricanes are going to be playing later on tonight, and we've talked about already on the show that there might be a possibility that the Hurricanes...
Cam Ward makes too much money.
Is it just too much money? Even for another, what is it, 2 years he's got left on his deal?
Yeah, plus 6.3 cap hit for the next 2 years. I mean, I like Cam Ward. He's been, before his injuries, he was a very consistent netminder behind a questionable defense at times. But that would basically be them acquiring $6 million, hoping he stays healthy, and then buying out Pavlik because they wouldn't have both of them. So that'd be the Jets putting out $18 million, basically, once you count in the buyout, even if it doesn't count against the cap, then the other $6 million per year for Cam Ward. Is this team going to drop $18 million into goaltending?
Well, forget the buyout concept and just look at
straight cash.
Well, on the year-by-year basis. So it would be just under $10 million for the two of them. For Cam Ward and Andre
Pavlik. Ward going to a team like Calgary's from Saskatchewan. I could see like a team like him needing a better goaltender. Something like that.
Are they going to trade an asset for him?
There's only so many teams
that need
that number one goaltender and are going to spend that much money.
Carolina may not need an asset if they just want to get out from under a heavy contract.
Right. Yeah, that's true. But you're going to be paying him. I mean, Reimer's an RFA. He made $1.8 million last year, so you're going to qualify him. I mean, he'll take you to arbitration based on his numbers and get more than probably 2.5. And I haven't looked at it closely enough. But the point is, it's not going to cost you six. Now, Cam Ward's certainly more established, but Cam Ward may cost you an asset. And it's going to be $6 million per year. I just don't see this ownership and this general manager allotting their money for that much in goaltending.
Valid points you make. My concern goes back to what I said before, that you're acquiring another goaltender who might just be as average as the current
it's
one
possible.
You have.
Then you sign him to a 1 year deal and you say, okay.
Right. Obviously,
two year deal.
You're not going to give him a huge amount of money. It's not going to end up being an albatross around your salary cap situation. But it also could end up with the situation that we're here at this time of the year next year saying, if only the Winnipeg Jets had better goaltending.
Well, this is the thing, though, Drew. This is the thing. If you're going to bring in Cam Ward, for example, that's $6 million, but you're taking money away from other players.
Right.
This team needs forwards and it needs a left-side second-pairing defenseman. And they can't get all that if they spend their money on the goaltending.
Because they already are spending that on Pavlik.
They're spending money on Pavlik, yeah, certainly. And they're spending a lot of money on some guys who haven't performed well enough, you know? I mean, like we can go over that list. Now, Jokinen's coming off the books, but there's going to be an elevation of some other contracts because they're going to bring some guys in, right? So that money you've allotted, you know, Enstrom's making quite a bit. Buffalo's making quite a bit. These guys are all making quite a bit. Now, Ladd's contract, next contract, is somewhat creeping into the conversation because we'll have 2 years after this season. And that's, you know, what's going to happen with him? Is he going to want an extension? So there's a lot of moving parts here, as I said before. But I don't see them paying that much in goaltending
when they have so many other needs. Now, if they only needed a goaltender like Ryan Miller, and I don't know if St. Louis only needed a goaltender, but if they only needed a goaltender like St. Louis thought that they did, then you pour your money into it and you say, okay.
Right, and that's a totally different ball of wax because right. you've got a team that wants to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Right.
Totally different situation.
Yeah.
Let's head to break. Before we do, get your dialing fingers ready. 204-780-1290. We're going to qualify somebody to participate or to enter for a chance to participate in the Juno Cup next Friday at the MTS Iceplex. You get an opportunity to be in the meet and greet with the players. You receive an autographed jersey and you participate in the Juno shootout. So 204-780-1290. Give Michael Remus a call and you can qualify to enter into the contest to win a ticket to the Juno Cup next Friday.
I'm calling him right now.
Yeah, you're calling in right now, Izzy. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
Boy, Remus is really cutting that music off quickly. What's he doing here?
Yeah. I think Izzy, it's because we're at BP that you're hearing it less. But I have to say, Remus, you know, Remus has been, we've had some interesting conversations with Remus back at the studio during the breaks, but he pulls out glory days, so he's all good in my books.
That's all it takes to be good in your books.
And he's coming over tomorrow for the annual Michael Remus baseball draft, so I can't wait for that.
Where's it being held at?
Well, it's online, but, you know, he's going
to come over and watch.
My condo,
there you go.
Remus never invited me.
Last year, Remus's team made a run, but it fell short, so we'll see what Remus has in store this year.
Interesting. Sabotage? Is that what you're accusing him of?
No, I mean, he sabotaged his own team. I don't know why.
Okay, let's head to Rapid Fire to wrap it up tonight.
Rapid Fire.
On Friday, the NHL handed out two $5,000 fines to Red Wings forward David Legwan and Pittsburgh Penguins forward James Neal for incidents that happened in the same game. Legwan was fined for butt-ending Evgeny Malkin in the third period, while Neal was fined for cross-checking Luke Glendening in the second period. Two-part question. Should there have been suspensions on the play, and should the NHL raise the minimum amount players can be fined?
The answer to both is yes, and I saw both of those incidents, and James Neal, absolutely. If you see that incident with James Neal, he clearly elbows...
He has a history now, too, of these things.
He has an absolute history of doing this, and to me, the James Neal one was deserving of a couple-game suspension. Now, as far as the raising the fines, $5,000, I was talking to my roommate about that, $5,000 is like a quarter to these guys. So I think it's time to increase that amount of money. More goes to the NHLPA Emergency Assistance Fund. So I think it is time to raise that.
I'm sure that that's mandated in the CBA. So I'm willing to bet
the NHL
cannot unilaterally do that. But it just goes to show you, I mean, those fines are a joke.
It's a slap on the wrist. It's nothing.
Yeah, it's literally nothing based on how much money they make.
Yeah, exactly. This week, Pittsburgh Penguins head coach Dan Bylsma said that Sidney Crosby is a slam dunk winner for the Hart Trophy this year. Quote Dan Bylsma, "This season I don't think it's even close. I think there's no question. I think he's skating away with it." Aside from Crosby, who are your other two nominees for this year's Hart Trophy?
Richie, I love that Dan Bylsma comes out and says that, by the way. Utmost confidence in your player. I think this is
He's not really going out on a limb when he says that, for the record, though.
I didn't say he was going out on a limb.
I know that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I like how he says it because, you know, you're not supposed to be brash. I think, you know, there's a lot of good candidates this year, and, you know, you're hearing the name Phil Kessel a little bit. You're hearing Claude Giroux a little bit. My two nominees for this award, I've got Ryan Getzlaff. We saw how good he was in the Olympics. He's been so good this year. My other nominee is Ryan Suter on the Minnesota Wild. You don't often see defensemen there. He plays half of the game. He's a rock on defense. He's been excellent this year. I think he's the Norris winner, if not Shea Weber. So I got Ryan Suter and Getzlaff to go with Crosby.
That's a really good question. Because, you know,
well, you know why it's good? Because I wrote it.
Yeah, you wrote it, exactly. But, you know, Crosby to me is the, no question, is the undisputable MVP of the National Hockey League. I think I agree with Izzy in that Ryan Getzlaff would be my second. Would be second in my voting. The third one is really difficult for me because, you know, you have an Alexander Ovechkin who's put up 46 goals, but let's be honest here, you know, flaws in his game and that team overall, and he shouldn't be blamed for all of it, but I don't have him in my MVP competition. Malkin's put up the points, and he's been, you know, good with some injuries, but I just don't think he's in the MVP conversation, or at least top three. Claude Giroux is a guy who's been dominant But at the beginning of the season, he did nothing, and, you know, that team's been catching up from that. And isn't it kind of how you perform over the course of the season? I know there's been guys like Theodore who performed really well at the end of the season and come out and won, but I don't know if you can move away from a guy like Tyler Seguin, who at his age comes in, is fourth overall in the league in scoring. Him and Jamie Benn have formed maybe the most dominant duo in the National Hockey League. And at his age and just the night-in, night-out dominance that he's displayed on a team that doesn't have the best defense and has solid goaltending but has depth at forward but not necessarily skill at forward, I would put him up as my third.
I like that choice.
On Friday, the NHL issued an apology to the Florida Panthers for a blown goaltender interference call that resulted in the game-winning goal for the Phoenix Coyotes on Thursday night. The on-ice official apparently admitted he missed the goal, although you could clearly see that Coyotes forward Mikhail Bodker bowled over Panthers goaltender Roberto Luongo. Should the NHL expand video review to allow goalie interference to be included?
Yes, yes, and I'll say it again, yes. This game has playoff implications. The Phoenix Coyotes hold down the last playoff spot in the Western Conference. As you mentioned, Drew, Bodker clearly bowls over Luongo. I don't understand how, with two referees, nobody saw that. Leads to the game-winning goal. That those points are crucial at this point of the year. Yes, the GM should vote that in. They should expand video review to allow goalie interference to be included.
I don't want goalie interference included as a reviewable.
Games matter and those points.
You know what? Let the refs do it. They're going to blow some calls. They're not going to blow some calls. I don't need to go to review every 5 seconds. What are you reviewing? You're reviewing goaltender interference. Now are you reviewing? Are you opening the door to review tripping? Are you opening the door to review hooking? Let the refs call the game.
I think this
is
going to happen, by the way.
You know what? The NHL's just got to get out of its own way. Once in a while, you have a blown call. Those will even out over the course of time. And the other thing is, I'm of this maybe the entertainment perspective. It provides for a conversation and things like that. And if your Phoenix Coyotes, sure, it costs you, or you know, Florida Panthers, it costs you, or Phoenix Coyotes are involved in this game. But if you're really going to be a team that I'm supposed to be concerned about, then let's talk about getting in the playoffs and determining that yourself. That one goal won't change the course of the entire 82-game season.
Last question. Earlier this week, Dave Schultz of the Globe and Mail wrote about future expansion possibilities NHL.
Another way NHL not getting out of its own way.
Writing that Gary Bettman had recently met with two prospective ownership groups interested in putting a team in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Is Las Vegas the new front runner to land an expansion franchise, or are Seattle or Quebec City still ahead of them in the expansion franchise
queue? Whoever will give NHL money will be the team. I don't care. I mean, who in Vegas cares about hockey?
Well, it's funny. In David Schultz's article in the Globe and Mail, he said if Vladimir Putin wrote them a check for $200 million, they would take it. So, no.
That's true.
To be honest with you, I still think Seattle is the front runner, not Las Vegas. But the problem is that's so many years away. I think we're probably 5 years away, maybe more than that. The NHL is doing so well financially, and I think the only chance right now is maybe if a team needs to relocate, and we know that that's probably not going to happen anytime soon. We have solid ownership now with the Phoenix Coyotes having ownership, so even though I'd love to go down to Las Vegas and put some money down in a VLT and then also see a hockey game at the Bellagio, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
But that's the thing, though, right? At the end of the day, isn't that just it? Is you can't have a team in Vegas. Like Vegas, sir, people will come once in a while and see a game. You need to have season ticket base.
Yeah.
Who's going to be buying those season tickets? Is it going to be all the casino just handing them out to people? Going to be any actual continuity? Come on.
It's a good question. Before we head to cheers and jeers, congratulations to Michael Smith. He was the qualifier for the Juno Cup contest, so he's entered into the draw for the possibility to go see the Juno Cup next Friday.
Is that the former decathlete, Michael Smith?
I'm not sure if it's the former decathlete, Michael Smith, or not. My guess is not, but you never know. He could be listening.
What about Michael Smith, the former GM of the Jets?
He was just Mike Smith, though.
You know. But his full name is Michael, Drew.
I'm sure it is. Let's head to
your full name is Andrew.
It is Andrew. It's true. Let's go to cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Gary wants in on cheers.
Gary
and jeers.
Wants in on
Gary Lawless wants a cheer here.
He's entered into the...
we're not going to have time for either.
I'm cheering Huss's plate of spaghetti right now.
Yeah, there's some meat on there, too.
Gary?
You know, under the code of men, not the NHL's code of fighting, but the code of men, there's a common respect and a looking out for one another. So last night I take my wife out for dinner, and we go for a drink beforehand. And the waitress walks up to me and says, you didn't leave enough money for your drink last night. First of all, my wife then turns to me and says, you were at a bar last night? So I get popped there. And secondly, I go three shades of red because, you know, I didn't leave enough cash for my drink. You know, sure. So then I go back in my head and I go, well, I gave Richie $10. I had one drink. That covers it, right? You know, well, then the lady informs me that, no, you had a special drink. It was
a fancy drink. I remember that.
It had 3 ounces in it, so it was actually $13. So because my friends Ezra and Richard wouldn't spill the loony and the
never asked us for
to
it.
Cover my drink, I'm not allowed out for another 6 months. My curfew has been rescinded. My hall pass, no hall passes. And so Drew, being a married guy, you know how hard they are to come by. Jeers to Richard.
That's enough. We don't have to do any. You guys don't even bother. Jeers to Richie and Ezzy. I'm good with that. That's it for this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I would have paid for it, I just didn't have any money in my pocket.
Big thank you to John Forslund, the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, for joining us. Chris Dingman, the television analyst for the Tampa Bay Lightning. A big thank you to Bruce Lubke, play-by-play voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings. And, of course, Chris Peters from UnitedStatesOfHockey.com. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and CompuStitch Embroidery Design. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim on site here at Boston Pizza, for producer Remus back in the studio at TSN 1290, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.